Hello, I'm Emma Martins, and you're listening to The Longest Battle here on RNIB Connect Radio. The reason I've decided to do The Longest Battle is because I caught a virus when I was in Vietnam in 2013. It changed my life forever, and as a result, I've had to pretty much learn everything from simple tasks like crossing the road to making a cup of tea. So I decided that I'd talk to other people who've gone through life-changing situations. My guest this week is the amazing and inspiring former model Heather Mills. Heather has certainly had to battle with many things throughout her life. From losing her leg, becoming internationally famous across the world, and dealing with a lot of media and press attention and intrusion throughout her life. Heather actually met my dad quite some time ago when she was a swimwear model. In The Longest Battle with Heather Mills, we'll hear about her early modelling career as a swimwear model when Heather met Dad, her life before losing her leg, and all about that accident in London when she lost her leg. I began by asking Heather about her early life, background, and where she grew up.
Well, you would think that I was born in Newcastle with my Geordie accent, but yeah. I was actually born and could have been really posh in Aldershot.
Okay.
My dad was in the army, and so he was moved up north when I was two, which was great because I love it up there. And he went to prison when I was, my mum left when I was nine, and then cause my dad was really abusive. And then my dad went to prison not because of abuse, because it was fraud, and he thought he was a reincarnation of Richard Wagner, the opera composer. And then my mum turned up. I hadn't seen her for 3-4 years. And that's how I ended up coming back down to London when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
And then I didn't last long with her either. So I ran away and lived on the streets when I was a teenager for about 6 months.
Oh, my goodness.
And then got a job in a croissant shop, and they said you can eat as many croissants as you like. And because I was a skinny, rakey thing, they didn't realise I'd eat 20 a day, so I got fired after a week.
Right, okay.
And that's when I decided to basically never work for anyone again and started my own first business, which was stick-on bras.
Oh, really? Is it? Okay. How did you meet my dad? How did you actually meet my dad?
Basically, years later, I was dating a guy, my first boyfriend, and he'd put an application for me to be in the Daily Mirror competition, the Dream Girls swimwear competition, and I knew nothing about it. I didn't want to be a model or anything.
Yeah.
And he basically had gave them, in those days it was the telephones, we didn't have mobile phones, you know, in the early 80s.
Yeah.
And the phone rang and it said, you've got into the final of the Mirror Dream Girl competition. I was like, I haven't entered a competition. And I looked and my boyfriend went, and I went, what have you done? And I said, so tell me about this model in malarkey. So they said, you know, you do this, you do that. And I thought, and by that time I'd had a few businesses. I was importing different things from a young age. And I thought, oh, that means I could do a bit of that modeling stuff and get to travel the world for free and create more contacts.
Yeah.
And long story short, how I met your dad was that Slick Swimwear needed a swimwear fitting model.
Yeah.
And so I did that, coming back and forwards from when I was then working in the former Yugoslavia, because the war had broke out when I was on a trip out there. Another long story. So yeah, that's how I met your dad, through swimwear.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And were you quite, as a model, were you quite a big model?
No,
or
not at all. Not at all. I only got the tag, like, Heather the model, when I lost my leg. So I was just your basic fittings model, and I'd done a couple of commercials, but I wasn't, you know, a supermodel. I didn't have the height.
Yeah.
My boobs were too big. I was a real shape at that time.
Yeah.
And they were looking for scrawny sticks and things on commercials. Obviously, that's come a long way, thankfully.
Yeah.
But so when I lost my leg, they just tagged me with Heather the model. And so they didn't do their research and say, actually, it's Heather the businessman that used a bit of modelling to do things.
Yeah.
So no, basically, I was never a big model, but I became a big name after the accident with the tagline of being a model.
That's what happened afterwards, my goodness.
But years later, I did become a name and was on the billboards in Broadway for Macy's and stuff, but it was always for charity.
Okay.
So my money when I was doing that would, after September 11 and things like that.
Yeah.
We did a big campaign for Macy's, and that was on every bus stop around America. And so I eventually ended up on big billboards, but not when I was younger.
Mm. So tell me about losing your leg. Tell me about what happened and how it had the pain or what happened.
Well, my mother lost her leg at the same age as me, which was bizarre. Mm. And they reattached it because that's what surgeons were trained to do. And if it's absolutely devastated, it's normally best to amputate, especially with the prosthetics we've developed. When I lost my leg, the prosthetics were awful. But I was working in the war in the former Yugoslavia after being there on a ski holiday with my husband at the time's ex-wife and kids, as you do.
Right.
I found out a lot about him and then eventually left and came back, crossed the street, and a police motorcycle chopped my leg off, crushed my pelvis, punctured my lung. Apparently it was going to a false alarm at Princess Diana's house. Oh. And then the police authority sued me, even though I wasn't going to sue them. So that was quite a shock. And I found that that's what they were told to do in preparation for me suing them, which I was never going to do. I thought it's an accident. So I had a 4 or 5 year legal battle with them. And while I was in the hospital for 5 months, I was in charge of my whole family. You know, they were dependent on me financially. I didn't have a mum and dad around.
Yeah.
And so I had to, you know, put my thinking cap on. And the media turned up. They wanted the story. I then turned that story into a book, which helped fund all of the mine clearance in the former Yugoslavia. Mm-hmm. And did a lot of work from my hospital bed. Mm-hmm. They said to my best mate, who's, you've just met, Ruth, been with me 35 years.
Wow, oh, cool. Yeah. Didn't realise that.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, brilliant.
So she was told 4 times, she's going to die, you better go and say goodbye. So it was pretty horrific for her.
Yeah.
And I'd asked her to send off and cancel my private health insurance that I'd had since I was about 18. Because when I did get married, I lost 6 babies. I had 4 miscarriages and 2 ectopic pregnancies and was told I could never have kids again. And she forgot to post the letter. So we were in the Mount Vernon Hospital.
Yeah.
And I had the luxury of being put into a private room because she'd forgotten to post the letter. And it's the only time she's been inefficient in 35 years. And I'll always thank her for it.
Wow.
So, yeah. So basically in the hospital, and infection kept going in my leg, chopping it off more and more and more. And my basically girlfriend came in and said, you got to go vegan. And I was like, what, vegan, schmegan, what is that? And took me off to America, and I healed within 2 weeks and never turned back.
You went vegan after you lost your leg.
I just
reiterate what you just said.
I went vegan
because
when I lost my leg, I was in hospital, had an infection, and they kept chopping my leg off more and more. And I didn't want to lose my knee.
Yeah.
And I'd crushed my pelvis and punctured my lung. So you have to lie flat on your back.
Yeah.
And I'd just started to be able to get mobile. So my friend took me off to a place called Hippocrates in West Palm Beach, and they shoved me through all these disgusting wheatgrass juice and all sorts of horrible things, and my whole leg just closed and healed in 2 weeks.
But that worked.
It totally worked. 5 months on antibiotics in the hospital, nothing.
Yeah.
And 2 weeks on a pure, clean diet, I was healed.
Oh my goodness, that's a big thing for anyone out there who might be listening, that you know, to get through that. So that's amazing, actually. Yeah. So did you have trauma after the event of when you lost your leg?
Well, I did on my body, but not in my mind, because I'd worked in the war in the former Yugoslavia, and I'd seen horrific things, and I'd been homeless. And, you know, it's about, everyone can handle certain things, but it's usually about what you've had to handle from youth upwards. So I'd never had a normal, stable, you know, loving family or a nice life or anything. So by the time I came to lose my leg, you end up getting used to just nightmares happening, but it means you cherish when the great things happen even more.
Yeah.
And some people have, you know, their life on a steam train and it's nice and smooth, but it's pretty boring. Mm. And others have roller coasters, and I have the giant roller coasters, so it's just how it is.
My granddad actually lost his leg, and he ended up having phantom limb syndrome.
I remember your dad telling me that.
Did that happen to you?
It happens to everybody.
Is it
if you imagine your nerve endings are used to communicating with the whole body,
yeah,
if you sever them, they are going crazy, wondering how they can connect to something. So they start to diminish years later, unless you're overactive, which I am, then you get phantom pains quite a lot. What I've found is if you wrap your limb in really, really warm hot water bottles and towels and things, but acupuncture is brilliant, homeopathy, massage.
Okay.
So when you lose your limb initially, most people, and I've counseled thousands, we have the Heather Mills Amputee Forum where I'll help one person and then they've got a pledge that if someone loses a limb in their area, they must help counsel them to overcome it. Because I can't do, you know, more than three or four a day, and especially with all the businesses and things. So we've been doing that for 20 years now, and it's absolutely fantastic. Because I've got a below knee. I don't know what it's like to be above knee. I know everything about the mechanics because I've developed most of the prosthetics with my team that you see around the world. But if I've lost an arm, how would I know what it was like to lose an arm? So with phantom pains, they're definitely real. You can definitely help them by massage. And when you first lose your limb, and if you're not as overly confident as I am, well, I'll just take my leg off anywhere in a bar and just go, can you give my leg a rub to whoever's sitting next to me? Most people are not like that, and that's why people forget I'm disabled, because I'm so comfortable with my disability. And I was like that from the beginning, because it's just a limb.
Yeah.
So I would just suggest anyone that loses their limb, get your husband, your wife, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your best mate, your kids, anyone, just to give you a good massage, and that means the limb is feeling like it's connected to something, and it also makes your family feel useful. Because they're devastated and they have to put on a brave face and they feel like, what can I do? So give them something to do.
Now we know all about Heather's early life, her modelling career and how she lost her leg. I wanted to find out from Heather, especially as a model, how she coped with losing her leg and how her friends have been there for her, supporting Heather before and after losing her leg.
Well, I mean, I've still got one really good leg that I work on, but it is harder when you've lost a leg, because when you lose a leg, you get atrophy. And so it means, because you haven't got the full connection of the leg, you can't do leg extensions in the gym. If you see any amputees without, you know, trousers on, just in shorts, you can see that one, let's imagine, one's like a thumb and the other's like a finger.
Yeah.
And so you always have one leg skinnier than the other. Mm-hmm. Now, my amputated leg is massively strong, but it's got no big muscles in it.
Yeah.
So I do a lot of work on my right to compensate. And I do miss, obviously, having, it's been quite a while now, having the legs that I had, because I used to do all sorts of stocking commercials and swimwear commercials and things like that. But they're just legs, and I managed to develop and make some unbelievable prosthetics. Mm-hmm. And that's why you can see today I've got these tights on, and most people wouldn't know I've got one leg.
No.
Because I've got my 5-inch heels on. Yeah. And the reason I can do that is because I develop them to make them available to everybody with the team.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, I've got a really strong core. So the most important thing when you get any disability, it's important when you're able-bodied, which is a funny terminology, because I have to hold up all my two-legged friends when we go out on a Friday night for a drink. And that's not because they're drunk. It's because they can't bloom and walk in high heels.
Yeah.
And here's me with one leg holding them all up in 5 inches. But that's because you have to have a very strong core. Mm. So if anybody's lost a limb out there, and even if they haven't, the most important part of your entire body to walk well and to be really healthy is your core, inside and outside. So digestion with regards to good food, and also with regards to strength. You can see a guy with a six-pack, and I go in the gym with him, and he's dead in 2 minutes. That's just body fat. That's nothing. Everyone's got a six-pack when you strip them away. And you can see a guy that's got a belly like Pavarotti, you know, and they're amazingly strong. Core.
Yeah.
So it's not about the visual look of how strong something is. So everybody should really just be focusing on being strong from the inside.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's very true. So tell me about your friends and family. Like you said, you've got Ruth who's around. Tell me a bit about
well,
you,
I've
what
got...
you've been through. It sounds like you've been through an awful lot that I didn't even have a clue about. where you grew up and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably what set me up to be able to cope with things that happened. So, you know, my mum obviously left and then she came back, but then she died when she was 47 because she had bad blood circulation from her leg because they'd reattached her leg years before, which is known now to be quite problematic. And she died in the Middlesex Hospital from a blood clot that went in her heart and lungs. And so she was 47 and her mum before her had died young. So everyone was like, oh, God, is Heather going to get past 47? So now I'm 52. I've kind of passed the mark.
Good.
And I've got a brother, two sisters and some really, really good close friends.
Yeah.
And my best mate is Ruth, who has worked with me forever. She came in to me to she actually modeled to fill in for me when I couldn't get back for your dad.
Okay.
For the swimwear.
Yeah.
She did a couple of swimwear sessions for me. So your dad has met her. If you just mentioned Ruth Matthews, you probably remember her.
Yeah.
She was loud at the time. She's not now. She looks like Halle Berry. She's absolutely gorgeous. But we're like Tweedledum and Tweedledee.
Yeah.
You know, I'll go into something and say, right, I'm going to do ski racing now. And she's like, oh God, do I have to learn to ski? And I'm like, yeah. And now she's a ski instructor, you know. So every time I do something, she is just right behind me.
She's like your family.
She is, like, she's my
soul. It's so nice to have that behind you.
She is my soul sister. She's amazing. So I look after her and she looks after me.
Knowing now how much Heather's friends have been there for her over the years, supporting her through everything, I wanted to find out from Heather what had been the hardest things that she had to deal with throughout her life and what have been the high and low points for her.
I would say at the time it was the media, if my whole life, because when you dedicate your life to charity and donating, you know, most of your resources and trying to make a difference, and then you go through that kind of abuse for 17 years, that was, injustice is the thing that gets me, you know, and there's so many powerful, abusive people out there that get away with it just because they're powerful. So that's changed. I won the biggest libel case in history last August against Murdoch's group.
Oh, wow.
And I kept some of the criminal evidence aside so that they can't, you know, come after me again with all the lies and the rubbish. And I, you know, and there's been a shift in life now that women can't just be, you know, abused and shut and pushed in a corner, and men as well.
Yeah.
You know, there are some very abusive, powerful women out there, but it's percentage wise, there's many more men, you know, when you analyze the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So no, it was a huge fight and we won in the end. And what I would say to anybody out there is, you know, you will get sick if you accept abuse.
Mm.
And whether it's abuse in the house or whether it's abuse from a staff colleague or the media or anything like that, you need to stand up for yourself and you need to get away from that abuse at whatever the cost is.
Yeah.
And I'm really, really glad that I did.
Yeah. So how did you cope with the high profile that your life kind of took after your accident and things like that? How did you cope with it all after?
I suppose so I coped with it because it was actually cathartic when I was in the hospital bed that I could tell my story and make money for the charities. So I started off with the media in a very positive way.
Yeah.
And I had honest press from 93 to 99. And then I was asked to write a book. And that was in 96, and that became a bestseller. So that was called Out on a Limb for Little Brown. And all that money went to fund the charities.
Yeah.
So it was Heather Overcomes Adversity, Positive Role Model, da-da-da. And then when I got married, it all went downhill because they went, oh, it's all right that this one-legged woman's overcome her disability, but she can't possibly marry an icon, even though he chased me for 6 months. But anyway, because I wouldn't talk about it, and before I'd always talked about everything.
Yeah.
Because I didn't need to be private. But if you marry someone famous, you've got to be private. So I was private. And then they didn't like it. And new editors had come in. And they just decided to target me and destroy the charities and destroy everything.
Yeah.
Without any consideration of the responsibilities that I had. That by destroying me, in turn, thousands of lives were affected.
Yeah.
So I think that's what was the most difficult thing, was that by me not being able to do the role that I'd created with the biggest landmine clearing charity in the world and everything. And by them destroying it, I knew that people were dying and suffering off the back of that. Yeah. And their one-hit wonder lines basically meant more to them than making a difference. So, yeah, so okay. that was probably the hardest thing.
Do you have highs and lows yourself? Do you deal
with these? No, which is really weird.
Yeah.
My boyfriend always says to me, why are you not? Because life's calm and easy now. I had some highs and lows when I was going through all the hell in the media, definitely. It was like, why do people who try and do good things and make a difference get punished? And why do people who are greedy and manipulative benefit and things like that? And then I started to realize now it is so bizarre how something horrible can happen to you that brings about great change. So what I realize now is if I hadn't lost my leg, there wouldn't be 400,000 people walking around now with prosthetic limbs and clearing 21 million square meters of minefield land, potentially.
Yeah.
And then if I hadn't have been abused by the media, I wouldn't have started with all the information and the research and everything to work with the Hacked Off campaign to bring 90 class actions to justice, you know. So,
yeah.
And then the exposure of the powerful people destroying people's lives wouldn't have come to head. And if I hadn't lost my leg, I wouldn't be vegan. And now there wouldn't be this huge vegan company that's feeding people to help people to do this, to do that. So anyone that's going through absolute hell, just try and dig really deep and work out, how are you going to turn this into a positive? How are you going to reflect, as I am now at 52, and go, wow, okay. I mean, literally, Ruth, my best mate, makes me look when we're having nuts days and goes, you know, this is amazing. How did we even get here? How did this happen, you know?
Do you believe in fate, would you say?
I do, 100%. I met my boyfriend on a train and he'd missed the train before and was fuming he'd missed the train. He said it was the best missed train he'd ever had in his life.
Yeah.
So I do believe, and I think everything happens for a reason. Mm-hmm. It's, and you're also given paths and it's your choice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which path you take. And I also believe in a lot of luck. You know, some people just have really bad luck.
It doesn't matter
what they do. You're just constantly bad luck. But you have to look at, you might have bad luck in your personal life, but you've got a lovely family or you've got a great business. So it's about, nobody has perfection. And I've lived on the streets way easier than being put in that golden cage, way easier.
Yeah.
Freedom, but you're free. And in a golden cage, you're not free. And having been from one extreme to the other, I know where I'd rather be. Yeah. You know, in the middle is the best.
Yeah.
You know,
definitely.
Work for someone, go home, have a life, love your family. Don't start your own business. You've got no life, 24 hours, 7 days a week.
And what have actually been Heather's proudest moments so far in her life?
Apart from having my child, who's now 16, after losing so many kids, and the doctor said it must have happened because you've been vegan for 18 years between losing the first and having, and now apparently I can have 5 or 6, but I'm 52 and I'm crossing my legs, so to speak. apart from that, probably creating the biggest landmine clearing charity in the world and now the biggest plant-based vegan company. And having the same friends now that I had when I was a kid and maintaining my friendships, because if you don't enjoy the road with your mates, then what have you achieved? It's very lonely.
Otherwise,
isn't it?
No, that's true. So tell me a little bit about Dancing on Ice, because you were on that.
Dancing on Ice I did for charity in 2010.
Yeah.
I'd already done Dancing with the Stars in America in 2007 for charity. And that was great fun. So if you imagine Dancing on Ice is like Dancing with the Stars or Strictly Come Dancing, you call it here. But 50 million times harder.
Yeah, I know.
So every movement you make, you fall flat on your face. And I'd never ice skated before.
And with your prosthetic limbs?
Apparently no one had ever done it. And I thought, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I Googled it, because normally you can Google somebody that's done something. You know, like I said, I Googled snowboarding once and there were amputee snowboarders. So that was fine when I had to learn that for a show. And I Googled it, and this lady's name came up, and she was the ex-gold medalist in able-bodied ice skating, mm-hmm. who'd happened to have a boat accident with her kid, and they'd lost their leg. And I thought, oh, well, she's been an Olympic, like a Torvald and Dean level, and now she's lost a leg. She must be the only person that can ice skate. So I managed to get hold of her, and I said, I'm doing this charity show, Dancing on Ice. It's not a charity show. I'm the only one that gave the money to charity, but the actual show. And she said, oh, no, you can't ice skate. It's impossible with one leg. And I went, well, no, you were a professional. She went, yeah, exactly. And I've tried it. You can't do it. It's yeah. impossible. And I went, no. She went, yeah, if you're going to do it competitive, no way. So that made me determined. I was like, right. So I worked with the prosthetic limb center and developed a leg that basically was finite on balance, but still very difficult. And I broke ribs and all sorts of stuff.
Your balance must be totally off.
Totally off. But I did it. Mm. And I actually popped by and saw Matt in the recent show, who was my dance partner, 2 months ago.
Okay.
And had a chat. And, you know, it's evolved so much that his dance partner was another guy, which was really cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was really, really good. And it's, again, challenging people's perceptions of disability and showing people that if I can do it with one leg, you can do it with two. It's purely in the mind. And it's always about your core. Every single exercise you do in your life, get your core solid and the rest is easy.
Yeah, this is true. And also I've read somewhere that you're doing Paralympic skiing.
The world record in speed skiing, which was an accident as well. So so I skied a bit before the war started. Obviously, I went on holiday with the husband at the time's ex-wife and kids, learned to ski, fell in love with skiing, and that's how I ended up going out and living in the then Yugoslavia. Mm. And then when I got married, my ex-husband didn't like it that I skied better than him. So we went once and then never went again.
Yeah.
So I didn't ski for 10 years. And then when I got divorced, Ruth said, after Dancing on Ice, she said, oh, you've been asked to go and do some skiing and promote a ski resort in Austria. And I said, I've just come out of a fridge box on Dancing on Ice. I don't want to go skiing. So she's like, oh, please, yes. And I hadn't been to Austria for years. I used to drive the trucks through there from Yugoslavia and back. So I said, okay, let's go. And then the Icelandic volcano went off. So we got stuck on the mountain and in that area for a week. And I really learned to ski fast. Uh-huh. Then I got told I should be a Paralympic ski racer. And I was 42 at the time.
Right.
And I said, I'm a bit old to start that. And Ruth went, no, you can do it. And then I eventually got on the British team and I won 4 gold medals and a silver, in downhill.
Goodness. Yeah. That's amazing. How recent was that?
That was when I was 47. So it was 5 years ago.
Yeah, cool.
And then I basically did the world speed record in bars against all the guys at 166 kilometres. I still hold that record. So I know that was fun. Yeah, love sport. It's what's kept me sane, I would say.
Yeah.
Find a passion, whether it's art, sport, anything. And something you can get your head out of, you know, when things are too busy.
Finally, I wanted to find out from Heather what advice she'd give to someone who might be going through a similar life-changing situation.
Just know that it will get better. You can be in the darkest moments, and I've counselled a lot of people in this situation, and it will change. You have to hang on in there and you have to communicate. You have to find who your best friend is, whether it's a therapist. I didn't have a therapist because I had a bad experience with one who said, you'll never be attractive to men again before. And I looked at this woman and was like, well, I'm 2 arms and 2 legs missing, honey. I'd still be more attractive than you. So let's move on. So I just think really dig deep and find a passion. Find something you love. If you're not happy in your job, don't try and live up to the Joneses and overextend yourself, you know. I live in a little 2-bedroom flat. People are shocked. Once I lived in a big house because I was, you know, in a different environment. But I never liked it. I still go back to my grassroots.
Yeah.
But all that happens is you get bigger houses, bigger cars. You get more stress, more pressure to earn money, more. And it becomes a pain. So just do what's true to you. And don't feel like you've got to prove yourself in any way other than to yourself, not to anybody else. So just be really true to yourself and spend time on yourself and get rid of the vampires. Yeah. There are so many wasters and vampires around. Put a bubble around yourself, know who you can trust and look after yourself.
You've been listening to The Longest Battle here on RNIB Connect Radio with me, Emma Martins. And my guest, the wonderful and inspiring Heather Mills. To find out more about my own longest battle and to hear other podcast episodes, please do visit my website, thelongestbattle.co.uk, or please follow me on Twitter. My handle is @_EMMARTINI.